What are you talking about?
What kind of talk is this anyway?
Theology Thursday with Steve-O and Mateo, featuring pastors Brian Nixon and Jared Petro.
Here it comes.
Let's begin.
And begin.
All right. It's time for Theology Thursday.
Yeah.
Now, which one of you guys... was Toby Mac's impersonator.
Neither of us.
It
but,
wasn't me.
You know, I want to say that actually when you look at that, the first interview was a lot more informative because he gave information okay. about his background and where he came from. I mean, who would have known that Toby Mac went to Liberty University?
Anybody that went to Wikipedia?
Only Brian Nixon.
I mean, that's just amazing. So if I were to you know, weigh the imposter versus the real Toby Mac... I thought the imposter gave a little bit more information that was interesting.
Especially when he said compadres instead of homies.
Now, what did
I think? I think he was a Russian. I think there was. I'm a conspiracy theorist here, so I think maybe the imposter may have been a Russian communist because he used words like compadre and things that are more. Kind of.
I hear you, man.
Conspiracy theories.
I mean, I appreciated the interview. I was just a little thrown off by the compadre thing.
Yeah, me too.
I was impressed by that gentleman.
I think Toby Mac's just a little bit more well-spoken than we all expected.
I agree.
And
yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
All right, so today is a little bit different because Steve-O's not here. And again, you guys, if you're tuning in, Steve-O's not here because his little baby Brody had a feveral seizure last night. He's okay now. But keep him in your prayers.
Yeah,
and one of the pastors here at Calvary Albuquerque, Jared Grebe, his daughter, Autumn, also had a febrile seizure. So we just need to pray for these little kiddos.
Yeah, crazy.
And then Clay Schroff's daughter had an asthma attack last night.
Everybody's in the ER.
Yeah.
Everyone's in the ER. But God is still on the throne, and just remember to pray for these people. But we're doing something a little bit different this particular program, right, Mateo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How can people call in and let us know? Questions.
Well, the number is 505-338-3700. You can call in. Doug is standing by right over there. He wants to take your calls because he loves people. He needs more friends. Just give him a call. He's waiting in the wings.
And in the past, we have had questions concerning our thoughts on movies.
Right.
And up until that point, Jarrett and I had yet seen any of these movies that we had been asked about. So we did ourselves a huge favor, and we went and saw the movie. So we thought this first half of the broadcast, we would talk about Noah, the Son of God, and even Transcendence, because someone had asked us along the way, you know, Johnny Depp's new movie, it talks about singularity. First of all, what is singularity? And then there's some rumors that it had biblical overtones, you know, or it asked metaphysical questions. So we thought this first half, we would talk about movies and some of the theological implications of those movies, give some recommendations. And if anyone has a question specifically about the movies we're going to be talking about and or pop culture in general, the theology of pop culture, please give us a call, 338-3700. That's 338-3700.
It just sounds so much better when you give that number. Man. Jared, you give the number.
I can't do that. I can't do it. I don't even know the number.
338-3700. Give it a shot.
338-3700.
Man, you both
call
sound,
today.
You just sound fantastic.
But we do have some questions on the we can hit later up, too.
Yeah, so we got a couple email questions, but first, I'd love to hear this, because I know when
you and I got out.
Yeah, Copper Lily was here, and Brian kind of talked about this with Tim a little bit from House Heroes and Copper Lily. So you guys go
they
for
were
it.
Great.
I want to hear it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, since you brought that up, what we were talking about with Copper Lily was Transcendence. Mm-hmm. Transcendence is a new Johnny Depp movie that was actually filmed here in Albuquerque in New Mexico, and it deals with artificial intelligence. And I won't spoil the movie, but essentially Johnny Depp plays a doctor who is working on a theory of singularity. And singularity, generally speaking, is where artificial or computer-based intelligence will outpace humanity and become smarter, if you will, than humanity. Well, through the course of the movie, a series of events happens. Johnny Depp is thrown into the computer world, the network, the internet, and he basically becomes godlike. And the movie then goes on to show him, Johnny Depp, in this godlike state. He's able to heal. He's able to, literally almost rise people from the dead. And there's a lot of biblical allusions. Mm-hmm. So the question that was posed to me is, could that happen? Could you know, could there really be an artificial intelligence where this happens? And then secondly, what's the difference between the accumulative knowledge that man has and the difference between God? Mm. So here it is in a nutshell. Could artificial intelligence happen to that degree? Plausibly, we've yet to see any kind of real bona fide artificial intelligence happening at that level. We do have artificial intelligence through computers mm-hmm. and supercomputers and so on and so forth. But the level that's shown in the movie, chances are maybe not to that extreme, but artificial intelligence definitely is coming.
Yeah.
Now, the difference, though, between the artificial intelligence shown in the movie and God's intelligence is that the artificial intelligence shown in Transcendence is discovered intelligence, mm-hmm. whereas God's intelligence is inherent. It's part of who he is. Man will never mm-hmm. be able to get to the level of omniscience because that is part of the character of who God is. He is omniscient. He's omnipotent. He's all these characteristics, what we'd call the attributes of God. Whereas the person in Johnny Depp's movie, Transcendence, is discovering. He's learning.
Oh,
he's trying to configure things through the use of the internet and, you know, shared knowledge. And he takes that knowledge and he uses it for good or for ill, however you look at it. But that's not how God does it. God is not up there trying to discover new things. He's not like, hey, I'm going to do some more experimentation. God is all-knowing, all-powerful. He's, you know, again, could go down this list of things. So the difference is man will never be able to get to that level, God-like level, mm-hmm. because we don't have all knowledge available to us because it's not inherent in our character. Whereas the character that Johnny Depp plays in Transcendence, he's just discovering.
Okay.
And here's a great book, by the way, that really talks about the Christian mind, and particularly as it relates to God. It's by a gentleman by the name of Harry Blumeyers. And Harry Blumeyers was a British gentleman, actually a student of C.S. Lewis, mm-hmm. and he wrote a book called The Christian Mind. And he points that truth out, mm-hmm. that humanity can only discover that which God has either shown through the creative order and or his revelation, the Bible. So man could only discover what God has already shown. So that puts us at a disadvantage, obviously, because God is omnipotent. He's all-knowing. He's everywhere. Man will never be able to do that. So, Jarrett, what are some of your thoughts about transcendence? So obviously, there were some biblical allusions. Mm-hmm. Johnny Depp ultimately comes back in the flesh, like an incarnation, mm-hmm. so he could be with his love. But right. you weigh in on this.
You know, I think it's just interesting because not only that, but different articles that you read from Wired Magazine, Modern Science, you know, there is a push towards artificial intelligence in a huge way. Matter of fact, I was just reading an article recently about the production of artificial blood in factories that will be created to make artificial blood and the transfusion of blood into people's bodies in a good way. But there's also that idea that you can manipulate DNA and you can fabricate certain things with artificial intelligence. And that's just kind of mind-boggling. But we live in a generation where we will probably see a lot of this stuff start to expand in a way in the next 20 years at least, to where you do see more of this in action. And, you know, for me, I almost like go back in a biblical sense from the movie. It reminded me of Daniel chapter 2, where Daniel is given a vision by God of another person's dream, Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar. And he describes various kingdoms, but the last kingdom he mentions, he talks about in those days when those kings begin to mix with they talk about the marriage of, you know, bringing things together, when they begin to mix with like man, and where man begins to, like God, create man in his own image in a way that excludes God. And he says in those days when that happens, that he will come back, Christ will come back. And I believe that that could be a reference towards whether it's human cloning or where God, where mankind actually begins to be God. And we see this all over the place. Man has been, you know, the question posed in there was an interesting, like, aren't you taking place of God? The question's asked Johnny Depp, and he says, well, this is what mankind has been doing since they've been on Earth. And so I think there's a lot of types in there because his name is called Will, the free will. He does create an image in his own image, where, you know, in the wife's name or the girlfriend is Evelyn, which is a type of Eve and so forth. So there's a lot of overtones, but finally love dominates and he dies for this woman. Yeah. So it's kind of talks about the sanctuary, Brian, is, you know, in the movie.
The garden,
so we don't want
right.
to give it away, but okay. but it's very interesting.
There is a lot of illusion.
Interesting.
And what Transcendence does is it really gives us a picture of faux or pseudo-modern.
Right.
And we just sent you an article, Matt, that I wrote about faux or pseudo-modern that maybe we could put on the website, because there are some characteristics of the pseudo or faux modern era that we need to be aware of, because, as Jarrett pointed out, it's coming. It's not like, is artificial intelligence or the projected self or, you know, are these things plausible? They're plausible and they're coming. So we encourage people to go to the website, the Static Radio website, to check out that article. But that leads us to the next movie, Noah.
Noah. Okay, and let me ask you this before we move on. Now, I know, like, with this, you know, rapidly increasing technology, one of the things we always talk about in the House of Heroes, man, is a lot of times the reaction from the church as a whole is one of kind of like, you know, like paranoia and fear, and like instantly is like, that's the mark of the beast. No, that's the mark of the beast. This is the mark of the beast. No, that is over there. And so I wonder, like, how as a church or as a Christian, are we supposed to approach this situation where, like, we are, like you were saying, artificial blood, cloning is, we're on the precipice of cloning, well, like constantly.
I would say, Matt, you know, there's basically three ideas based around that. There is a skeptic view, a sensational view, and kind of a stage setter view. And I take this from an author who brings this up in his book on just looking at signs of the day that we live in. And skeptics obviously just look at everything and say, this doesn't say anything, it doesn't mean anything, there's no supernatural kind of thing, to an extreme. But then you have a sensationalist who reads into everything, and they have, you know, a hamburger from McDonald's and it has the face of Jesus on it, or Mary, and they say, this is a sign from God, they eat a bad taco or whatever.
It's so a it's very just, blessed hamburger.
You know what I mean? So there's a sensational. And those two extremes you have, but in the middle is this kind of idea of stage setting, to where you can see certain things on the horizon. It should never move us. Even God, multiple times throughout the Psalms, throughout the Bible, we have where even if sudden destruction comes, we are not to be moved, because God is in control. Mm-hmm. And it's like we're in a theater and he has the stage set, and there are certain props that come up that we know that there's something coming. So there are definite signs. There are certain things that we need to be aware of, but never to read into it. We don't take a newspaper and read into the Bible. Rather, we take the scriptures and look at things around us. We don't assume anything. We look at it, and a sign is a sign. A sign points to something. It's not the actual, though. And that's important to realize, too, is that a sign doesn't necessarily mean it's the exact thing. You could have multiple signs. For 50 years, we had signs coming that, you know, we would be depleting, like, our deposits of oil and all
True.
This. So you have signs throughout time. You could have, you know, cataclysmic signs that the earth is, you know, going through a lot of upheaval. So you could have signs, multiple signs, but the actual event is how far away is that, or whatever, you know, is you don't want to read into that.
Right.
So I would say, you know, with that said, when you, as a believer, I'll just put this out there as you're listening to the station, and we want you to call in, but we really believe that we need to be stayed in our faith, steadfast. The Bible says we're not to be looking even, although we see those signs, we're to be looking up. We're to be constantly aware of Christ's return. The early church was always aware that Christ can come back at any moment. They live their life with that urgency, that dependency, but never in fear. And so we live by faith and not by fear.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to, have you guys seen Donnie Darko?
We have not, but
no.
But I want to hear this question.
Cool.
And I know
Name.
We said we'll go to Noah, but let's go to a caller
right now.
We got
to call on line one. Hello, Theology Thursday. You are on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
After coming to Christ, I did some research on the web on movies that have a Christ-type character. One of those that popped up was Donnie Darko. What do you think about that if you've seen the movie?
Yeah, I think I'm the only... Mitch, have you seen it? Mitch and I have both seen it, but I don't think Brian...
I have not. So, Mateo, give us some insight into
this. Okay, so it's kind of crazy. It's definitely a think piece. You have to watch it a couple of times because it deals with alternate timelines, and time travel is a big thing. And like Dave and Waverly... That's one of his absolute favorite movies, is Donnie Darko. But you have the character,
have it.
And it's been a while since I've seen it, so Mitch or Mr. Caller Friend, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but Donnie Darko's his kid. He, some tragic stuff happens, and through this radical series of events, he finds a way where he can go back in time and kind of kickstart reality from a certain point. And there's like this rabbit, this weird like,
Frank.
Yeah, the rabbit's name is Frank, and it's this whole method of time travel that he finds out from this book that this lady wrote, and it's kind of crazy. Is that kind of right? Caller, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, pretty much. And then towards the end of the movie, well, at the beginning of the movie, it shows like a big jet engine falling in the room.
Yeah, it involves like a vessel. You have to have a vessel to go through and open up the timeline. It's really like a thick movie. And it's, I'm not recommending it for kids by any means, because it is rated R, and there's a lot of vulgar language and adult situations or whatever. But it's definitely time travel. I never really picked up on the Christ parallel. What did the article that you read, what did that say?
Well, basically, towards the end of the movie, he realizes that in order for time to normalize again, he has to basically go back into his bedroom and allow that jet engine to basically fall on him and kill him. So he sacrifices himself for the good of humanity, basically.
Yeah, I see. Because spoiler alert, he falls in love with this girl, and she's like the main one that gets... you know, she gets killed, and so then I see the sacrifice thing. I never really thought about that.
I never watched it in that term.
I think just movies in general, there's so many of them. You know, I think The Matrix, I think of a new movie by Tom Cruise that's going to be coming out where it's like a restart where they have to kill, he's got to kill himself over and over again to restart it and learn things. But I think in anything when there's a Christ overtone, we see that so often throughout, you know, different movies.
Yeah, and that's not just movies, it's literature. It's
literature,
because it's a theme we're familiar with. So we can, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Associate ourselves with that.
Yeah.
We could really see that, wow, this person is dying on our behalf. So it's a theme that's common in movies. But sadly, I haven't seen Donnie Darko. So it'd be something interesting to look for.
It's a think piece. Thanks for calling, man.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
So let's go now to Noah.
Yeah.
Because Noah was one specific movie that someone called in or Facebooked in and asked us, what do you guys think of that? I'll start, then I'll throw it to Jared.
Okay.
First of all, we need to have the general understanding that it doesn't follow the biblical chronology specifically. Two areas that jumped out to me was obviously how they dealt with the Nephilim, and then, you know, the stowaway, the son of Cain, who stowed away on the ark. Neither of those are biblical. However, here's a thought I'm going to toss out. Both of those are types. They're analogies. First of all, with the Nephilim, big rock creatures. There weren't big rock creatures helping build the ark. But maybe what the director was trying to say through that is that there was a supernatural component to the building of the ark. We know definitely that there was a supernatural component of bringing the animals to the ark. So the director may have been giving us a visual cue, if you will, saying, hey, I know this seems crazy, but there was a supernatural element to this whole construction and the bringing of that. And then you look at the stowaway, the sons of Cain. Obviously, the biblical record doesn't indicate that Cain's son was on the ark. However, again, as a type, as a metaphor for sin staying with humanity. Mm-hmm. Even though Noah was passionate about allowing God to cleanse the earth, judgment to come, and that they were the chosen vessel, if you will, to continue on, I think the director may have been saying, hey, sin is still with humanity. And so he gave a visual representation of that through the, you know, stowaway.
Right. Yeah.
So again, was Noah, did it follow biblical chronology? No, not necessarily. But I thought the director did some interesting aspects with it to allow us to go, what is he saying by this? And that's my walk away. And actually, I kind of enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
Jared?
You know, I actually think that although rock creatures, it was kind of interesting to see, you know, these angels who had come down to earth to guard the garden initially. When they hit the ground, they became solidified in earth's material or mantle, where they became crusted in rock. And I agree with Brian. I think there's a lot of spiritual overtones, at least the messaging in a movie. It is what it is. It's a movie. But what I would say in Genesis chapter 6, it's interesting. I'll just read this, but this is the greatest script that you have if you're looking for where it speaks about this. In Genesis 6, it says that man began to multiply on the earth, and daughters were born unto them. And it talks about the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were attractive. And so they took them as wives as they chose. Then the Lord said, my spirit won't strive with man or abide with him forever, for he is flesh, and his days shall be 120 years. It says, then the Nephilim were on the earth in those days. So they were already there. They're different than the sons of God. And also afterward, when the sons of God came to the daughters of men and they bore children to them, they were mighty men of old. So you got to understand that you have basically three types of people here that, or creations, if you will. You have man, you have the sons of God, which is referred to as angelic beings, and then you have Nephilim, which we believe that may be something totally different. They're called the fallen ones. It's not the Nephilim who are having children with others and that sort of thing. It's a whole different thing. But God, he talks about that. The sin of man was evil only. It was continual. It was, that was the thought and intent of the heart. So we do have the biblical record of that and why God considered, you know, that Noah found grace in God's eyes, but God was going to cleanse it. The interesting thing, though, is that you find that as God would cleanse the earth with water, then we're told by Peter later on that Christ will then, God will cleanse the earth by fire. So it's interesting, the parallel there, that God plans to do this again. You know, so to me, it's like almost a witness to God can do cataclysmic things like this for reasons
right.
beyond our understanding, even, you know.
That's awesome. All right. We know I have a caller that wants to chime in on the conversation. Hello.
Sure.
Hey, what's going on? This is another Matt. How are you, Matt?
Hey, man. I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. You know, I watch movies all the time, and I always try and look for not necessarily God parallels,
yeah.
but like a sense of the Lord, you know. And what do you think of the movie Constantine?
Mm. Have you guys seen that?
You know, I saw parts of it. I think it was put out a while back, but if I recall, again, a Christ figure fighting demons, I would say.
Yeah, also based on a comic book.
Yeah. You probably know more about it.
That's
yeah.
one of Steve-O's like favorite characters.
You know, I recently did see, though, I, Frankenstein, and it was kind of, I'm guessing, kind of similar to that, where the soul of Frankenstein, he didn't have one, and you know, he was able to destroy demons. But interesting, I agree, they're interesting concepts.
Wait, yeah. before I talk about this, I've got, is this Matt Gentry?
Yes, it is.
Matt Gentry, how come you didn't get on the line and say, Brian Nixon, what's up? How come you didn't say that?
I thought you guys didn't care for me anymore.
No.
Matt, are you? What?
Hey, this coming
I'm
from
teasing,
the guy
I'm teasing.
What? Doesn't tell me or Steve-O when he's in town so we can hang out.
Yeah. Matt Gentry, are you in town? Are you in town or are you in Tucson?
I just moved back to Albuquerque a few days ago.
No way. Matt Gentry, welcome back to God's land. Now, I'm not saying Tucson's bad, but they've got cactus that are weird down there. We've got the beautiful Rocky Mountains.
I love the high desert. And there's one thing in Tucson you don't get.
What's that?
And that, how do I say this?
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say this. Last July, it was July, August, something like that, it was 110 degrees, 50% humidity. And I'm like,
wow,
this is awesome.
Ugh.
Not.
Yeah, you're making me think of back south.
Hey, Matt, so you moved back a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
We're stoked. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to go out to lunch, and you're going to have to catch up and tell me about your former skateboard gangs you were rolling with there in Tucson.
Oh yeah, big time. We're the only skateboard gang that wore cowboy boots while riding skateboards.
That's
three
awesome.
People. Out.
That is
cool.
Awesome. That is awesome. But I'm so glad Matt Gentry's back. But to answer his question, I haven't seen Constantine, but Matt is exactly right. There are so many God themes. There's so many Christ themes
found
throughout movies, throughout literature, because that is one of the overarching questions.
And I would add too, Brian, that it would be not only the Christ theme, but you do see the Antichrist theme as well, oftentimes in movies like that. You know, and even anti, in the sense that taking place of Christ. So you have that contrast even.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and you know, if you take movies like, and to be honest with you, I mean, I'm a crier. I'm a pretty emotional dude. I cry in Hallmark commercials, so, you know, I'm not kidding. You know, and I'll catch a lot of heat from saying stuff like, there was a movie with Robin Williams, which actually was about reincarnation.
Yeah, yeah.
It was called What Dreams May Come.
Yeah.
And it was like, I got teary-eyed because there were elements that I was like, it gave me a sense of like, man, heaven's going to be awesome. You know, even though it was more like they were talking about reincarnation and everything, I didn't see that part of it.
Yeah.
What I saw was, it gave me a sense of what heaven might be like.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Because it was your Christian worldview that was assessing the movie and you were looking at it from Christian lenses. And I think that is an interesting component for us as Christians to think. You know, there may be movies out there that, let's say, aren't necessarily Christian in the traditional sense, but we as Christians can glean and see things and pull things from those movies or from a book or from music that we can go, Lord, thank you. Or, Lord, this reminds me of heaven. Or this reminds me of the love of Christ, or this reminds me of, you know, our love for the church or one another. So we can glean, you know, elements from movies, from books, from music that really can draw our attention and our focus back on the Lord.
Amen, brother.
Amen. Matt, seriously, give me a call that you're back. My number hasn't changed. I won't say it publicly because then people like Mateo and Mitch may start calling me, but you can call me. The number hasn't changed.
Right on. We'll talk to you guys soon, and I will call you, buddy.
All right,
Matt. Hear from you, man.
So, but you know, Matt brings up a great, you know, point is that you know, you can look at a movie, you can see something, and really glean from it as a Christian, and use culture to impact our larger culture, because the Apostle Paul did that. That's what we do here on Static Radio. A lot of people may call up and say, hey, why do you guys play a secular song? Well, we're using that song to impact the culture, just like Paul did when he quoted the poets from his day and age.
Yeah.
And he used it to say, hey, this is bringing about a truth that I want to communicate. It's exactly the reason why we do it here as well.
Definitely. Give us a call, 505-338-3700. We've got a call here on line two we want to get to. Hello, you're on Theology Thursday.
Yo, hey, what's up, guys? How are you this morning?
Good.
Great.
Thanks, man. Thanks for holding on the line. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. I got a question that's kind of off topic from the movie we've seen you guys are doing. Mm-hmm. But it's about Easter, and mm-hmm. I think it was Monday that on KNKT, on the Greg Smalley and Susie Larson show that you guys have, a caller had called in about Easter and the sunrise service, and forgive me for not being able to get having a little more info, but...
Right.
She commented uh-huh. about civilizations about the sunrise service and how some civilizations in the past they've actually sacrificed children at sunrise. Is there any truth to that?
Well,
or?
Let me say here that probably what this caller was asking, are there parallels to the Christian story, the Christian narrative, to outside pagan or non-Christian stories or narratives? And the simple answer is, yeah, there are some parallels there. But that doesn't mean that Christianity borrowed or is a non-reality because there are similarities out there. I know there was movies, what was it called, The Zeitgeist or something
yeah,
of that nature,
Zeitgeist.
That people were trying to say, oh, look, Christianity is really just an accumulation of all these other cultural stories and put in a new myth and wrapped up in the person of Christ. And that is really just a false, and we could actually get into that on a, you know, multiple levels.
Yeah, that could be
but
a
there
show.
Are similarities, but that doesn't mean Christianity isn't true.
Yeah.
And the power of what Christ did on the cross. But Jared.
Yeah, you know, I think too, when you go in the Old Testament, nations were giving child sacrifices way back when, and God told them that they needed to be cleansed out of the, you know, because of their pagan rituals. But you have that civilizations that were killing, you know, were sacrificing with the intention that there would be resurrection. The story from Babylon of Tammuz, who was, you know, come from a mother-child kind of relationship that we have, even in what you see in Catholicism of mother and virgin and child. That kind of concept is still threaded all the way back to Babylon, even pre-Catholicism and all that. So you have that, yeah.
And obviously, Christ has come to redeem and restore. And like what we talked about, Jared, I think, last week about the Easter eggs.
Right.
And someone had called and said, hey, can Christians use Easter eggs? And you said, of course they can, because we're not using them as pagan sacrifice rituals. We're seeing them as a symbol of new life, as the resurrected Christ. So again, it comes back to the heart of the individual, the relationship we have with God through Christ. And things have been restored and redeemed. All of us are witness to that. Prior to coming to Christ, we were pagans. We were not restored. We come to Christ. Christ is doing a new work in us. And what is true of the human being, we could almost, you know, use that as a worldview or a parallel to culture. Christ is redeeming and restoring culture.
Right. I think one of the big things that happened in the New Testament, one of the big arguments I know Paul addressed a lot, was the whole eating food sacrificed to idols. Now, of course, we don't deal with anything like that. But maybe a parallel, because I know one question that might come from your question from the person calling in the other day is, okay, well, if this has pagan ties, you know, even like Halloween, all these things, if there's, you know, pagan anything in the mix, then do we practice it at all? And that's something that, thankfully, Paul addressed with the whole eating food sacrifice to idols thing. And it's like Beanick said, Jesus showed us that it was all about the heart. And you know, because it was so tied up in with works and everything with the Pharisees and Sadducees, and it looked, they were whitewashed tombs. And then Jesus was like, look, man, it's not just, you know, if you go and do something with a girl, then it's adultery. He's like, that goes back to your heart. If there's lust in your heart, then, you know, it already qualifies as adultery. So with all these things, it's just like Beanett said, it's a heart matter at the bottom of the whole issue.
And but, you know, what it does bring up, this question of this gentleman, is that we probably do at some future broadcast need to deal with the zeitgeist and some of these theories, because it's so common today. So many people discount Christianity. Well, you know, ancient Rome or ancient Greece or the Syrian, you know, mystic religions, they all had these Christ-type figures. So Christianity's not unique. It's just another one of the Parthenon of religions. And these early followers just so happened to find this Jewish peasant that made this God. And the truth of the matter is, and the historicity of the matter is, that is not the case.
Right.
So, but that is something we would have to delve into at a later broadcast, because it really needs dedicated time to unpack that. But hopefully that answered your question. Did that help a little bit?
Yeah, it did, and now that you guys have mentioned that, there's so many different things, like you said, parallels that Christianity doesn't relate or doesn't get from these pagan rituals. But you know, there's just so many, I guess, things that we do as Christians that kind of relate to, but we don't get that from pagan rituals.
Yeah, what's interesting is talking about signs, Jarrett was just talking about signs. C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien both believed that some of those similarities were kind of signs that God put in other cultures, myths, if you will, that pointed to the reality, the truth of what God was doing in history. So C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien thought, well, you know, these things that we see as parallel or similar were really just signposts. They were advertisements saying, hey, the real thing is coming. Be on lookout for it. Be on watch. Mm-hmm. And then when Christ came, he was the fulfillment of all these things. So again, for a future broadcast, but thank you for your call. He does bring up some interesting aspects.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome.
One of the things, too, I want to encourage people, because zeitgeist is such a big hang-up. I've seen it. I know I found out about it from that band Muse. The singer is totally all about it.
Right.
But do a quick Google search. Just look up zeitgeist controversy, and you'll see that a lot of the information presented in that movie is not accurate. Like, they go through this giant list of savior figures that are supposed, like, they line up with Jesus and they have all these similarities. And there are a few that have, you know, quite a few similarities, but most of them in that list are incorrect. And it's really easy to go see, oh, well, they just threw that in there.
And not only that, it doesn't really address the uniqueness of Christ. I mean, you could draw parallels.
Yeah.
Human beings are smart. We could look at types and we could look at analogies and metaphors and we could draw comparisons. But when we get to the literal historicity of Jesus Christ, his life, his death mm-hmm. and his resurrection, which we dealt with last broadcast, it really shows how unique Christ is. And not only is he unique, but there is history. There's biblical evidence. There's changed lives that all attest to that Christ wasn't just another figure. He was the figure
right.
of history. But let's go back to this whole idea of movies. And by the way, if you're listening, 338-3700, that's 338-3700, if you want to chime in about movies or about culture in general. You know, there is a good book out there by Steve Turner, who's a British journalist, and he's written extensively about pop culture. He wrote about Christians in the arts. I think it was a book called Imagine. But more recently, he wrote a book called Pop Cultured, and Steve Turner really does a great job in addressing various components of popular culture, from movies, from humor, from radio, and he gives a great biblical balance, and he gives a good apologetic as to why Christians should be engaged in these topics. Because these topics, if you will, are kind of a thermometer of where our culture is at. And when we look at that thermometer, we should glean from it and use it and point people to Christ with it. And so I would recommend our listeners to pick up Steve Turner's Pop Cultured, as well as the book that we said, Harry Blumeyer's The Christian Mind, because Harry Blumeyer's does discuss what a Christian should be thinking about and such. But good stuff. I know we have another caller here, so let's go to them as well.
Okay, yeah, we'll go to line one. Hello, you're on Theology Thursday.
Good morning.
Yes, hello. I was calling because I wanted to ask a question that I got recently asked previously, and I kind of didn't quite know how to answer it. I was just going to ask you the same way I was asked. For someone who doesn't believe in the Bible and who doesn't really take the Bible as a reference, for someone who just has no faith, how do we know that we didn't come from, you know, a mutated genetic thing that just developed after the Big Bang or something that maybe developed early in time, or as to say, you know, ancient aliens came to,
sure.
you know, this planet and inhabited it and then began to grow and for some reason just, you know, it evolved into a human being?
Yeah, great question.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Great question. And I'm going to unpack it here in a minute, but Jarrett wants to start us off.
You know, I want to say that, you know, when I think of, and you got to take as, when you think about God's revelation, and you're right, you know, when you look at, you know, outside of Scripture, there's two revelations. One is called general and one is called specific or special revelation. When we look at the universe, creation around us, we ask a question, something made this. There's a reason. There's a drive in us to discover an answer to the things of life around us. And so we search for those things. It's interesting because, and again, I have to pull from Scripture because now I understand these things in a sense. So you gotta, just looking at it. Psalm 19 describes that God, as an intelligent designer, designed the universe, and it has a language, and it speaks. But if you just stay with general revelation, and it doesn't lead you to a special or specific revelation, it makes sense that all cultures will just worship, whether it's trees or Mother Nature, that they'll be limited. They'll even create man or God in their own image, in man's image, because that's the totality of it. When they finally go full circle and see that a tree can't give life and it's just a creation, then they come to themselves. They finally begin to create images, whether it's a godlike figure person, whether it's Thor or like a Superman type figure. We're told that through ancient cultures they do this. But if it doesn't lead you, if general revelation or natural revelation doesn't lead you to something specific, then you're going to be very limited and begin to look around. The question is great. Do we come from something else? There's nothing wrong with that. The answer that God gives from general revelation leads to special revelation, whether it's God direct communication, whether he spoke through a prophet, which we talk about God speaking through a person, giving direct revelation of himself, whether it's through Christ or, you know, through Scripture as we look at. So we have special revelation. We look at that and see the distinction of that. Leads us to a person by the name of Jesus, of course, which we see as a specific revelation that God was always pointing towards him. If general revelation doesn't lead us to specific revelation, we'll always be answering that asking that question, I should say, where did we come from? What's it all about? And it makes sense. So I want to start with that and then have Brian talk about what about mutations
yeah,
when someone's
well, that's great. Well, first of all, Jared, that's great that you gave that because that's where I was actually going to start as well. There is general and specific revelation, you know, or we could use a different terminology, two different books. There's the book of the Bible and the book of nature, and God is the author of both. So when we look at things in reality, these two books should parallel. They should speak a common language. There should be a directive that we see between the two. And that's exactly what we do see. When we look at the Bible, we see that the Bible shows reality in a very real way. It shows it as we see with our senses. We go out and we go, hey, look, there's sun, there's trees, there's earth, there's people, there's land, there's plants. And the Bible talks all about this. And it tells us, and it gives us a narrative, the story of how God created. And it talks about the reality of human beings and so on and so forth. So the general revelation, specific revelation, or the two books, the book of nature and the book of the Bible, really do speak about the same creator God. Now, to answer your question specifically, this extra-biblical evidence, for the person who doesn't believe in the Bible, I would then go and use the book of nature to describe why we believe there's a God. And again, this isn't just us who did it. Paul did it. Paul, in Romans 1, goes to the book of nature and says these things are self-evident in the natural world, that there is a creator God. And we could even go further now because we know so much more about the human body, about nature, about DNA sequencing, about all these different things. We have so much more accumulative knowledge, but nothing has changed. The more we learn about what we know about the human body, the more we could say, wow, there is a God. There is a creator behind all of this. Let's just take the sequencing of the DNA. The sequencing of DNA is so profound, so complex, so very fascinating that there are multiple of scientists, be it Stephen Myers, who is a brilliant mind, and he actually wrote a book called Signature in the Cell that I would recommend you to get. You have Stephen Myers, who they take an in-depth look at the DNA and the conclusions that they draw that only an intelligent designer could have created or could have orchestrated or could have designed the DNA. And then you get the founder of the Human Genome Project, that the first Bush and then Clinton and then still going on, but researching and unraveling the DNA. He, too, would say, you know what? There is only one explanation for all of this, that there is an ultra designer because of the intricacy, the fine-tuned nature of our DNA. Points to a designer. So let me just use an analogy. I wouldn't look at Mateo or Mitch here and say, hey guys, nice watch I see in your hand. You know, where did you get it? Well, it just appeared on my hand. One day I woke up and it was just there. I would look at them and go, you're crazy. Obviously, you had to have bought it from a store, which included people. And they had to have get it from a factory where they assembled it. And then they factory had to have worked with engineers who designed it. The engineers had to work with part manufacturers that gave them the parts. You get the point. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of thought process that went into the simple watch you wear on your wrist.
Right.
So what gives us this blasted idea that when we look at something so much more complex than the human watch, the human brain, or the DNA sequencing, mm-hmm. and then we could just say, well, that just came to be. That's ludicrous. It's illogical. So to go back to your question, I would start with nature. I would begin with design and purpose, or what we would call teleology and theology. All of these things that point to a creator. And that's because Paul did that in the first chapter of Romans.
And then also, a lot of the ancient alien stuff is based on the works of one guy, and his name is Zechariah Sitchin. And it, to your friend that said this, he might have watched the show on the History Channel called Ancient Aliens, and for the factual, you know, integrity of the History Channel, I would direct you towards their mermaid special that they aired, as well as all the Bigfoot shows and all that stuff. But anyway, this guy, Zachariah Sitchin, look him up. He's the main guy. He supposedly translated the Sumerian texts, which are some of the oldest texts that we have in the world from any civilization.
That's right.
And the thing about it was he's come under so much scrutiny, especially in the last like 10 to 15 years, because when he made his translation, he, number one, wasn't an expert, and he was making huge leaps in his translation, like literally looked the guy up, surrounded by controversy. His translation is, there are so many holes in it nowadays that more linguists have looked into the ancient language. We can understand what they were actually saying, and it's like, no, those weren't spaceships. It didn't mean that. And there's just so much controversy surrounding Zachariah Sitchin that I don't think it would be. I mean, sometimes I just wonder. It takes so much faith to believe that we were created by aliens and to go back and all that stuff. Then why not give Christianity?
That's exactly right. You know, I appreciate that you brought that, because there's as much faith going on in evolutionary circles, in circles of alternative life coming to planet Earth, as there is of Christians just saying, hey, there's an intelligent designer we call God who created the universe, and he's also the author of the Bible. So don't give me the thing, well, you people are just living by faith. No. There's as much faith in the scientific realm as there is anywhere. But did that sort of answer your question?
Yes, I mean, it did. And the way he put it, I mean, I am a believer. The way he put it, though, was just, you know, it was extraordinary, because it's far-fetched and it's way out there, but it went along exactly what you were saying about the greater creator. You know, like, it had to have been, you can't, the watch didn't just appear on the wrist. The way he described it was like, there were, like, the ancient aliens, the way he said it, was just kind of like, what if they had, you know, when they had made, kind of the way he has it, is the way they had mutated and genetically, you know, when it evolved into man, that man needed some sort of figure, or man needed some sort of idea for the comfort of mankind to believe in something that it couldn't just come from such an alien life form. They couldn't accept that into mankind.
Right, right. And again, and he brings up some, you know, interesting points. But what's happening here is they're still going off an evolutionary mindset that through a chance and, you know, the construction of ancient, you know, bacteria or ancient molecules that, you know, humankind evolved from that.
Yeah.
And they're saying, well, that couldn't have happened. Therefore, we're now assuming that something from outer space came. And, you know, that's not unusual to our day and age. That actually, Francis Crick, one of the founders of the DNA sequencing, once he began to unravel DNA, he said, this is so complex, this is so amazing, that there must have been extraterrestrial life that came and inserted this on planet Earth. So again, one of the huge atheistic scientist is taking this leap of faith by saying, hey, there must have been aliens that somehow brought this down. So what your friend is saying is not unique to our day and age. It's been around for many, many years. But again, it's a step of faith. It requires them to insert a story, a narrative in what we find. What my suggestion is let's look at the evidence. Let's look at the book of nature. Let's use our senses and draw out from there. And what we conclude is there is intelligent design. And then when we look at the book of nature and we look at the book of the Bible, we find that these two are running in parallel. They're running in tandem and they're saying the same thing. Excellent. So it's good stuff. But I would have your friend check out Stephen Meyer's Signature in the Cell. It is a hefty book. I understand that. But what he does in this is he looks at DNA sequencing and comes to the conclusion only an intelligent designer could have sequenced this. It's an amazing book, and I recommend it highly.
Yeah, man. Thanks for your call. Now, we only have about 7 minutes left, maybe 5 minutes left to show, and I know that Jared has a question that he wants to talk about.
You know, this is changing a little bit of the topic, but I had a friend who recently posed this question. When a big church, what do they do to hold up the morale of the body after an important part of that body is gone? And this may be in reference to maybe seeing a pastor who's taken out of a scene, who is very influential. And I would say, you know, if you get a chance, if you can tune into Pastor Skip's study last night, Wednesday night, it was out of Leviticus, actually, 24 and 25. He speaks about Balaam. Numbers, yeah. Thank you, Brian. I said Leviticus. I meant Numbers. Numbers 24 and 25. Thank you, Brian, for that correction. Mm. But nevertheless, you have in there the story, especially in chapter 25, when there is immoral conduct happening, and in the camp of Israel, that's exactly what happened. Skip gives a great example of how, you know, the body could have cancer in it, and a doctor says, I need to amputate or remove a part of this body so that the rest of it can live. A good doctor would do that. Sometimes we can look at that and say, well, are you crazy? Why would you amputate a part of the body, just looking at the minor factor of it? But in reality, God wants to, in his mercy, he's saving the rest of the body. So God has a way of removing, because God is not mocked. I would say this, it is painful, but God is merciful. He has a way of removing things like that if there is sin in the camp, because he's not going to be mocked, especially when someone's representing the Lord like a pastor or a leader within church. And so often, because of the ministry is a forward ministry, a visible ministry, the fall is hard and it's visible to everybody. But I would say that, I believe, speaks about God's judgment that is very open. It's like exposing darkness and light. God has a way of exposing with bright lights on our life, and graciously does that. But I would say, I would pray for the body. I would pray for those that are affected by that. I pray that they would see God's mercy in it, that God doesn't receive, you know, when there is immorality or sexual morality or something like that, especially like in Numbers 25, that God, he's very serious about it. Matter of fact, even in that story, it says that 24,000 died as a result of this morality that had came into the camp of Israel with sexual morality and everything, but God stopped it. So sin does affect other people. Don't misunderstand me. But God will amputate a certain part of that for a reason. So I hope that answers your question, going out to Toro in Texas there. So
yeah, good stuff. Yeah. Well, I know we're wrapping it up, and I just want to say these resources again, because, you know, part of what we're trying to do is not only provide answers, but equip people with good resources to study, to learn some more. So from the first part of the broadcast, we mentioned Harry Blamire's The Christian Mind. Again, he was a student of C.S. Lewis. He's written both novels and theological works, but in The Christian Mind, he walks through how a Christian should be thinking, and he does discuss the discovery of truth, not the invention of truth, which kind of corresponded to our discussion of transcendence. We recommend Steve Turner's Pop Culture, because he deals with so many facets of our pop culture world that's saturated, but he does it from a biblical and, I think, very balanced vantage point. And then, of course, regarding the design principle in nature, using the book of nature to show people that the uniqueness of God's hand, I would recommend Signature in the Cell by Dr. Stephen Myers. Signature in the Cell by Dr. Stephen Myers. Of course, you could go to Parchments here, or go to parchments.com and look up some of those, or just go to your local bookstore anywhere. But all great information. Great broadcast. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and you know what? We have a few questions we'll answer next week. I know that people put online, we don't want to leave them hanging, so we'll make sure we get to those right away.
Definitely.
So
if you missed anything today, we're going to put the podcast up ASAP.
Yep.
That's available at mysaticradio.com.
And everything that they talked about will also be in the little description, so you don't have to worry about
that.
Perfect.
Beanix, I like that resource recap.
Oh, yeah. That was great,
make,
man.
That'll make life so easy for this guy.
We need to do that every show, guys.
Always. Yeah, that's a good idea. Thank you.
I like that. Mitch, what do you
thanks
learn
for listening.
Hey, yeah, man.
Yeah, love
it. I'll listen to you.
I just learned so much. I learned that Brian Nixon does an incredible impression of Toby Mac.
He does with he his does. His.
Wait, wait,
what was
that
his comrades or his?
I'm assuming.
It's one of his compadres.
We don't know who that. We don't know who it was. Yeah, I learned
fourth wall.
That me and you are getting better at doing a show together.
Yeah, we got excellent. One solid break.
Thank
it
you
was
guys.
Awesome.
And that Doug is incredible.
Woo!
Every day.
You just realized that.
I realize it more and more every day.
Okay.
It's a process.
It's progressive.
It's a process. Guys, thanks so much for listening. Again, pray for Brody and for the others that are sick.
So
Pastor
many.
Jared's daughter.
No,
Autumn.
Yeah, creepy.
Yeah. Autumn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Clay Schroff's daughter, too. So many are sick right now. Keep them in your prayers and your thoughts. We really appreciate it.
We love you guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening. This is Team Awesome Morning Party.
Bye.
Goodbye. Static Radio.